I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Caitlin.
Oh, geez, we just woke up from being in a cryopod and society around us is terrible, but it always has been, so not anything different.
But wait a second. It's probably I'm only interested in pursuing this story if it's the working class's fault.
Well, you're in luck because
if the 1% is implicated in this, I'm walking. Okay?
Well,
I'm walking.
Today's movie, that's what it's about. Me. So,
wow. Okay, welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie Loftus.
My name is Caitlin Durante, and this is our show where we examine movies through an intersectional feminist lens using the Bechdel test simply as a jumping off point.
And this week, you'll notice, is we are releasing this the week of the 4th of July, a national holiday that gets more and more ridiculous with each passing year. The only good thing about the 4th of July is Joey Chestnut. That has been canonically true for decades at this point. Now.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about this, making this episode for a while and trying to find, you know, kind of either we were between like, oh, we can find a really classically jingoistic movie to kind of cover and debunk, or we can try to find, you know, a famous American satire to cover for this week. And since we made that decision, we've just been losing our rights. Miranda rights, don't know them. The right to an abortion, gone. Just it's you know, if you're listening to this and you know, even if you are not American, you are probably aware that it's particularly dystopian.
Yeah,
these past few weeks, years, decades, and so I feel like it's a particularly interesting time to take a look at the movie. So all that to say, I just think it's for preamble. We chose to cover this movie before the most recent avalanche of lost rights, and I feel like it coincidentally ends up being kind of an interesting discussion because we are covering the movie Idiocracy today, a movie that has been discussed a lot in the past decade. And now that I've seen it, I don't understand why. But first, we have some housekeeping to cover. That being, what the fuck is that Bechdel test you were talking about, Caitlin Durante?
I'll tell you, Jamie Loftus. It is a media metric created by Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test. And there are many different versions of it. The one we use, we've put our little flourishes on the test over the years, and our version is two characters of a marginalized gender have to have names. Mm-hmm. They have to speak to each other, and their conversation has to be about something other than a man. And ideally, that conversation is narratively relevant and narratively meaningful.
This week is actually, you know, kind of a doozy as it pertains to that metric.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting because we are also recording an episode about the Minions this week. And by the Minions, technically Despicable Me, but I'm very excited for our Minions episode. Mm. But I was watching Idiocracy and Minions Media. Because sure. I, you know, we're covering, and this is a, you know, tacit plug for the Patreon.
Of course.
We are covering Despicable Me this month. And what I think is interesting watching Idiocracy and Minions Media back to back, kind of, mm-hmm. is you get two very different interpretations of what a society of bumbling men would look like.
Uh-huh, true.
And honey, I prefer the Minions every time. Because at least, it sucks because I really genuinely love the vast majority of Mike Judge's work, but at least the Minions are making me laugh, you know.
Can't say the same for Idiocracy. Whoopsies.
Minions hilarious. Idiocracy really was bumming me out in a wild way.
Yeah.
So anyways, I feel like a classic Bechdelcast episode of taking something that everyone keeps saying is good and being like, actually it's not very good. But you know what? Argue with the wall. We're right. That's what I want to tell to say to a lot of people. But
I will say, and we'll get into this, but just as a little bit of a preface, that I see what this movie was going for, and at the time I liked it when I saw it in 2006 as a college sophomore. But
well, let's talk about it. So, like, what is your relationship with this movie?
Yes. So I saw it when it came out, because it came out sometime in 2006. I was in college at the time. I was already a huge Office Space fan. It was like one of my favorite movies at the time. So I was already team Mike Judge. And I saw this movie. And at the time, in the mid-2000s, when my critical thinking skills and comedic sensibilities and cultural sensibilities were not quite as sophisticated as they are today.
Well, don't be hard on yourself, because this is like part of what's like interesting about looking at this movie now is like how, again, it's like I don't think that this movie is uniquely pushing this kind of comedic point of view. Mm-hmm. I feel like this lines up really closely with like a lot of Bush era comedy that is like
that we all thought was funny at the time, right?
Well,
or at least many of us,
a lot of people thought was funny. And then I also see, I feel like this movie is a great example of how the kind of aggressive apathy of this style of comedy probably had, you know, not the biggest hand, not as big a hand as fucking villainous policy and disenfranchisement, but I do see how, you know, this brand of comedy in its day served to further polarize people in a way that I don't think was like really recognized at the time, because why would it have been recognized at the time?
Right.
Yeah. So all that to say, don't be hard on yourself. Everyone was loving
Thank
this shit.
You.
Like, it's true.
It's true. So yeah, I liked it at the time, but didn't really engage with it after that first maybe one or two viewings in the mid-2000s. But I'm excited to talk further. And again, just as a preface, I'll say I see what the movie was going for. Looking at it through our, you know, 2022 lens, a lot of the attempted satire, maybe not executed very well, and maybe just throws a lot of groups of people under the bus. Anyway, Jamie, what is your relationship with this movie?
Okay, so I am going to be harder in this movie because it feels uniquely designed to make me frustrated. But okay, so for context, I had not seen this movie before, but I have considered myself to be a Mike Judge fan since I was basically a kid. Like, I was kind of a late comer to King of the Hill, but I've now seen a lot of King of the Hill, and mm-hmm. I really love King of the Hill.
Sure.
Not an unpopular opinion at all. It's a great show.
Yeah.
But I grew up with Beavis and Butthead. My dad was a huge Beavis and Butthead fan. We had it on a lot.
Mike Loftus.
Yeah, shout out Mike. He did refine my taste very young. It was all Pee-wee and Beavis and Butthead, and I'm eternally grateful for it. Mm-hmm. I've got Beavis and Butthead merch. I watched the new Paramount Plus movie the day it came out. It's good.
What? I didn't even know that was a thing.
Well, I do work for Paramount, so I was like, I was reminded, but mm-hmm. it's really good, and I would highly I watched all of Silicon Valley, and I didn't even really like it, but I just feel like loyal mm-hmm. to Mike Judge mm-hmm. because I like his work.
Yeah,
I like Office Space. Like, he's made so much amazing stuff, and so, but I had never seen Idiocracy. Mm-hmm. All that to say, I went into this movie expecting to like it because I like Mike Judge's work. Really, the only thing I knew, like, the basic premise of, like, it's a future American dystopia.
Right.
And I also knew, and I think that this is, like, I've kind of got, like, more stuff for this later on in the discussion. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like this movie, just every couple of hours, someone will tweet, Idiocracy was a documentary. Like, it was their idea. Uh-huh. Like, that is literally tweeted every 45 seconds by someone who is like, I'm a genius. And it's like, okay, first of all, IQ is bunk, an issue this movie has that I mm-hmm. have been studying for years.
Right.
But anyways, part of what I love about Mike Judge's work is that he has this, like, way of showing characters whose, like, views are regressive and I feel like King of the Hill is the best example of it, but, like, who are, like, goofy people who you would disagree with, that most people would disagree with,
sure.
but showing them with context and enough empathy that you're like, I understand how this person got here. And it feels like a more productive, empathetic piece of art. And so I was just really surprised that, like, Idiocracy was so heartless in its views, and it just felt like a real, I don't know. First of all, Idiocracy is not a documentary, you fucking dorks. Sorry, but, like, first of all, not an original thought. Second of all, not true. I don't know. I just have a lot of, I didn't like the movie, and I was really bummed. I didn't like the movie from the first scene because hashtag stream my year in Mensa. But, like, yeah, the fact that this movie, like, it's weird because I totally agree with you, Caitlin. I do think that it was coming from a good place. And I think for its time, it is, I don't know, for its time, I understand why it was, like, considered to be, like, controversial satire.
Sure.
And I understand why people saw value in it.
Especially in the era that it came out in, which, I mean, this movie was being shot and eventually released in the middle of the George W. Bush administration.
Yeah.
When it did seem like society was heading toward a certain place.
And it's also like, that wasn't wrong. I just feel like it's whatever. My opinions aside, I think this is, like, a kind of a very, very interesting movie to look at to see, like, what were center to left leaning people viewing the people around them like at this time. And I feel like this movie really, because it's like, we were both, you know, I definitely didn't see this, you know, this movie came out when I was, like, in middle school. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, like, hear about it at the time. But, like, we both, 2006, you know, we're senior citizens. We were there. And I do remember this a lot. And I would, like, even kind of group this. And I know that I'm not saying, like, the quality of jokes are the same across the board, but I would kind of group this in the, like, Jon Stewart Daily Show era of comedy. Mm-hmm. Back when my aunt would fucking die for Bill Maher, unfortunately, kind of comedy kind of, like, gotcha left-leaning-ish comedy, of which there was a lot at this time. And, like, even early Colbert Report, even though I feel like that's kind of the best of all of it. But you know what I mean? Like, it was a very specific moment in comedy and, like, satire. And it's interesting to look back on. I really right. didn't like this movie.
let's talk more about it, shall we?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry for like going on. I was so shocked. It's so, you know, like when you really love a creator and you have like a creepy little parasocial connection to them, and it's like, how dare I not like this? But
there was such a big gap between when I first saw it and now. I had just forgotten about all the incredibly problematic jokes and humor.
They're like, let's tacitly endorse eugenics. I'm not saying Mike Judge was like actively recognizing that is right. sort of what the movie is being like. Mm-hmm. Some people are just born inferior. Right. We'll get there. Yes. We'll get there. Let's talk about what happens in the movie.
Because there
also were some like specific jokes that I laughed at.
Some things work. Some of the commentary does work. A lot of it doesn't.
Carl's Jr. stuff worked for me.
The Brando stuff. Yeah. Any kind of like commentary on capitalism and consumerism
worked.
Yes. Okay. Here's what the story is about. The movie opens on voiceover discussing how, as we entered, we being society, entered the 21st century, human evolution was at a turning point where intelligent people, quote unquote, were reproducing less, and quote unquote, less intelligent people. And these quote unquotes are from me and not the movie. So the movie is saying intelligent people stopped producing as much and less intelligent people were multiplying more than ever.
My blood pressure is in peril.
So this is how the movie is framing this. And we get like this whole montage where we meet these two couples. You know, one is more intelligent and they're coded a certain way. The other couple is, you know, less intelligent, quote unquote. They're coded a very particular way. We'll talk about it, but
I mean, it's literally like, yeah, like grad school. I mean, not to put you in a box, but like, you know, people who have been to college multiple times versus like, it's coded as like, quote unquote, trailer trash.
Exactly.
People.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So we meet these characters, and the whole thing is the characters who are coded poor are reproducing at a higher rate. Anyway, then we meet Joe Bowers, played by Luke Wilson. He is an army librarian who has been selected to be used as a human guinea pig for a military experiment in which soldiers will be frozen and then unfrozen at a later date to be used for future wars or something. I'm not really sure.
Oh, yeah, but it's like that Chris... What was that dog shit Chris Pratt... like Amazon Prime movie? It was like the Tomorrow War. He was being deep frozen for Chris Pratt's The Tomorrow War.
Yes. What was that? I know what you're talking about. I didn't see it.
Sorry. Sunny's here right now, and he is like looking at me, and I like, we can communicate telepathically, and he is saying, you bitch, comma, Idiocracy is a documentary. Because
well, yeah, Sonny the dog fucking loves
He's a centrist. He won't back down. He won't back down. Gosh. He's like, I tweeted it and I meant it.
Wow, Sonny.
You were wrong for that. Continue.
Okay, so Joe is selected for this experiment because he has no family and he's also just extremely average across the spectrum.
Sure.
They have also selected a woman for this experiment, a sex worker named Rita, played by Maya Rudolph. And the plan is to freeze them both for 1 year and then unfreeze them. But Officer Collins, the guy who is leading this experiment, is fired and the project is completely forgotten about. So Joe and Rita stay frozen for 500 years while... While society around them descends into shambles. The cryopods that Joe and Rita were in ended up in a landfill, but a huge garbage avalanche shoots Joe's pod into the living room of Fredo, played by Dax Shepard.
Kind of incredible. I don't have strong opinions on Dax Shepard, but you're just like, but you see him in this role and you're like, Yeah.
Yeah. That was good casting. Yes.
Look, when we're not punching down, because his podcast is like 900 times more popular than ours. So
right.
Relax.
Good job, Dax. Frito is watching a show about a guy who is just hit in the balls repeatedly, to give you an idea of what entertainment and pop culture is like in this society 500 years later. So sure. Joe wakes up, he's all disoriented, and Frito tosses him out onto the streets, and Joe stumbles around town. He notices that society has crumbled into quote unquote idiocracy, where where the restaurant formerly known as Fuddruckers is now called Buttfuckers.
Okay, try as I may, I can't not be like, okay, I'm giggling.
It's not a good joke.
It's maybe the laziest joke of all time. And also because of the strong no homo energy to this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It feels, but, and then you're just also like, I mean, I just feel like you're given so little things that I was laughing at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it's not a very good joke, and yet it's maybe one of the better jokes of this movie.
Like,
to give you an idea.
Yeah, that's what I, like, I feel like the bar is on the floor.
Yeah.
And because it's Mike Judge, the bar is like beneath the crust of the earth. Like, you're just like, but you
know.
Whatever. I think that this is interesting in the frame of being reactionary commentary from 2006.
Right.
We'll get to how Mike Judge engages with people's modern takes on Idiocracy in a bit, because I think that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Buttfuckers. So Buttfuckers is a restaurant. People Iconic. Mostly speak in unintelligible grunts. Mm-hmm. A green sports drink called Brondo comes out of water fountains instead of water.
Sure.
These are the things in society now. Joe doesn't feel well. He thinks he's hallucinating because of the drugs the army gave him, and he doesn't know that it's 500 years in the future. So he goes to a hospital.
500 years of summer. That's how I'm going to start describing global warming.
500 years of summer. I like it.
No. Not to be joked around about. But yet, what are we supposed to do?
We laugh so we don't cry.
Right. And we still cry.
Just
later at night.
When we're alone.
Yes.
So Joe goes to a hospital and sees Dr. Justin Long.
Oh, my God. We've covered so many movies in the, like, mid to late 2000s where Justin Long, like, is just becoming becoming an influencer of his time.
Yeah.
I've come all the way around. I'm just like, Justin Long, kind of a cultural icon, whether I like it or not.
I mean, I've seen the movie Tusk, and it's the best movie ever made. Okay.
I haven't seen the movie Tusk.
You gotta see Tusk.
And that's my business.
So Dr. Justin Long realizes that Joe is unscannable because Joe doesn't have this, like, barcode tattoo that everyone in the future has.
Right. That was, like, one of the things that I was like, okay. That's it's an easy thing to guess at, but it's not, you know.
Yeah, that worked for me.
Sure.
So this leads Joe to finally realize what year it is and that it's like 500 years in the future. They are both freaking out, and Joe runs away and then gets arrested because he didn't pay his hospital bill. So he's taken to court, where his court-appointed lawyer, Frito, the guy whose apartment Joe crashed into, defends him, but he does a terrible job. Joe tries to plead his case and explain the army experiment, but no one takes him seriously, and he is found guilty. He is then given a tattoo, like the barcode tattoo, and ID, and then he's made to take IQ and aptitude tests.
Kind of funny when he's called not sure. I was giggling. Look, it's still Mike Judge jokes. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
And they call him not sure the whole movie.
Pretty funny. So then he takes these tests, and then he is sent to prison, but he's easily able to escape because he is smarter than everyone there. And he goes back to Frito's house, and he's like, hey, Frito, has anyone invented time travel? And Frito's like, yeah, there's this time machine. And Joe's like, okay, you have to take me there. So they head toward the time machine.
Real MacGuffin time machine.
Right. Meanwhile, Rita has also become unfrozen and is roaming the streets. She's kind of like scamming a guy out of a bunch of money who is trying to like pay for her sex work. Joe finds her and picks her up to take her to the time machine. To get there, they need to catch a shuttle from a huge Costco, but the cops are chasing them because Joe escaped from prison, and they catch Joe before he's able to get on the shuttle.
Quick interlude. Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Funny.
It's funny.
Yes.
Good.
And then the cops take Joe to the White House because the results of his IQ test caught the attention of the highest levels of the U.S. government, because it turns out Joe is now the smartest man in the world. So President Camacho, played by Terry Crews, comes in. He hires Joe as Secretary of the Interior and announces that he's going to have Joe fix all of society's problems, like the failed economy and the dying crops. But Joe doesn't know what he's doing, and he's still trying to get to the time machine. So he has the other cabinet members bring Rita in, and then Joe and Rita try to run off. But then Joe notices that the crops are being watered with Brondo, that green sports drink stuff. Mm-hmm. And he tells everyone that they have to water the crops with water. But because this doesn't work immediately, and because switching to water means that a lot of people who work for the Brondo Corporation have lost their jobs, people are furious at Joe, and he is sentenced to one night of rehabilitation, which is actually Joe being put in a gladiator-style arena.
Like, allowing the government to run you over with a truck. Which, yes. Again, is like, some of the satire works. That's funny. When you see that, but it is kind of. When you see that bizarro, like, shredder monster truck run over that guy, he just turns into dust. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of wild.
Yeah, and, like, all the monster trucks are shaped like dicks. And there's just a bunch of like dick and dildo jokes. And I'm like, sure.
Sure, why not?
Meanwhile, Rita notices that the crops are starting to grow and Joe's plan is working. So she and Frito rush to the arena. Meanwhile, back in the arena, Joe manages to avoid being killed by the monster trucks and avoid being killed by this guy named Beef Supreme.
And a lot of very 2006 special effects around at this point in the movie.
Yes. And then Rita and Frito prove that the crops are growing by broadcasting footage of the crops on the Jumbotron. So President Camacho pardons Joe and the day is saved. Rita decides to stay behind because she was offered a CEO job at Starbucks. So then she and Joe say goodbye, and then Joe is about to go off to the time machine, but it turns out that the time machine is actually just a theme park ride and not a real time machine.
He cannot go back in time. So I was disappointed for Joe in that moment. I was like, that genuinely sucks that you have to live here.
He really does. So he accepts a job as vice president of the U.S. He eventually becomes president. He marries Rita and they have kids and they live happily ever after in society that seems to continue to just descend further and further into shambles.
So that was certainly something. shall we take a quick break and have a panic attack and return?
Let's do.
Yeah.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
And we are back.
Boy, oh boy. I feel like, okay, I do want to start by kind of addressing the elephant in the room, which I feel like is... I mean, I don't want to say, like, this movie's, for me, this movie's biggest failure, because I feel like that is, like, a broad statement. Mm-hmm. I feel like, for sure, like, its biggest, like, plot structural failure, which, again, and I've heard this, so, whatever, brief context, beginning basically when Donald Trump's, I don't know why I full-named him there, like... But, like, beginning when Donald Trump ever heard of him, he ruined our lives. but beginning when his candidacy became viable, I feel like that is when the Idiocracy as a Documentary idea sort of started coming. And even a little bit before that. But I think mm-hmm. that the big, like, resurgence of, like, Idiocracy as a Documentary came when Donald Trump became a viable candidate, because a lot of people saw the Terry Crews character, who is a professional mm-hmm. wrestler who became president, mm-hmm. reflected in Donald Trump, who is a fail-son reality star who became president.
Yes.
This completely ignoring the fact that we already had elected an actor to be one of our worst presidents in the 1980s, but whatever. Yes. I guess we'll give it a pass. I wasn't around for the 1980s, so I couldn't bitch about it. Mm-hmm. In any case, like, 2014-15 was when this started to come up.
Yeah.
So I was surprised when the central conceit of the movie, and again, I've seen this has been more discussed in the past couple of years. I want to shout out Sarah Zed, incredible YouTuber, and my bud, who made a great video about this. We'll link it in the description, who kind of unpacks this to a larger extent. But basically, what is at the core of this movie is the concept that your IQ determines your deservedness to reproduce. And the idea that it's just very, like, essentialist, and that, like, this movie, I feel like its biggest failure is it ignores, kind of with the exception of corporations, mm-hmm. every structural problem that exists, and mm-hmm. instead redirects that anger and resentment on poor people.
Yes.
And that is so, like, and it's, like, so many things. And again, it's like, the corporate stuff is kind of exempt, which I think is an interesting reflection of, like, where the writers' minds were at this time, because they recognized that, but they did not really, like, there's so many things that happened in this movie, beginning with, okay, sorry, I'm just, like, already melting down, but, like, let's talk about IQ first, because that's where the movie starts. It implies in the opening sequence, a sequence that rivals Midsommar for opening sequences that make the want to just explode. What makes me want to reflect a recent experience of mine, put Dr. Bronner's on my vagina by mistake.
Oh my God, Jamie.
Look, I did not know that you were not supposed to do that. And what a horrifying lesson.
I'm so
peppermint
sorry.
Dr. Bronner's on my one clitoris. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. A vat of acid. So
I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing.
No, you're right to laugh at me because I got into Mensa and I did that, which is further proof that IQ is a false metric. You don't have to be smart and you don't even need to be able to read. The thing is, like, okay. IQ is, like, it's implied in the opening sequence of this movie that people with lower IQs are the source of most societal ills.
Right.
People with higher IQs are also being criticized here, but in a very different way, where, like, people with higher IQs are being criticized for being so cautious that they refuse to reproduce. And I feel like both of these takes have aged very poorly, and the take towards people with lower IQ is much more harmful, but both of them are harmful.
Sure.
So, I mean, whatever, like, I've done a lot of research in the past about IQ, and, like, I feel like it's pretty common knowledge at this point, but was not common knowledge in 2006, that IQ is a deeply, basically at this point, useless metric on every front. It was invented by this French guy named Alfred Binet to basically, like, use in schools for kids who were, like, to track their progress every so often. The idea is that IQ is not permanent. It was a way of sort of evaluating how schools were doing. It wasn't a reflection on the individual.
Right.
What it turned into was it was taken a hold by eugenicists, which are, you know, like, which is the school of thought that your intelligence can be determined by your gender, by your race, by your class, and that these are individual essentialist faults on people and have nothing to do with systemic stuff. And so it's just, like, without giving the history of eugenics, but, like, IQ has been weaponized against a number of marginalized communities over the years. It's been particularly, Black people have had IQ weaponized against them, Black Americans specifically. There's a really famous book from the 90s called The Bell Curve that it was a very popular book that just argued white Americans are simply smarter and they should be like, it's a white supremacist text, but it was very popular. I mean, it goes into all this stuff, like, your skull shape determines whether you deserve to live or die. If you are anything but completely neurotypical, you are somehow less worthy to not just reproduce but live.
Exist.
Where there have been like it's just been used, it's been taken so wildly out of context from the reason it was created that it has literally, it's not just marginalized and excluded people, it's killed people. And it's now just now becoming a more common knowledge thing, and is, like, that is slowing, but it's not stopping. And so all that to say, I'm not implying that I think that Mike Judge knew the history of this and did it anyways. Based on his other work, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that this was kind of just, like, a lazy writing choice. But that, as a baseline for your movie about the decline of society, is just, like,
just
one of
not
the worst takes you can have. Like, it's kind of stunningly bad.
Here's my whole spiel about that. Don't apologize.
But I've made a podcast about it 2 years ago. I don't really want to talk about it more, but, like, it's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing, and it's a horrible basis for a movie, like you said, because there is a way to make a satirical movie about uninformed and regressive ideology spreading and leading to the downfall of civilization. There's a way to do that that's thoughtful and effective as far as satire goes, and that doesn't demonize marginalized communities like people living in poverty, for example. But this movie doesn't do that because it's just making broad statements like, first of all, just that, like, some people are smart and other people are really stupid. And I'm trying to avoid, like, ableist language on this episode. I feel like it's going to be difficult
because the movie leans into it
very hard. So it's doing that. It is also coding those people in very particular ways, where again, the quote unquote smart, sensible people are coded as being upper middle class, wealthy. Again, those like that couple in the opening sequence, according to IMDb.
Boston University, but don't like to talk about it.
Vibes. Look, I renounced my master's degree. that couple, according to IMDb, their characters' names are Yuppie Husband and Yuppie Wife. So that just like gives you a sense.
Which is like kind of funny because it's like, consider who is writing the movie. They would much more closely identify with the yuppie husband and yuppie wife than with the poor people. But there's still just like vitriol. There's just a complete void of empathy for anyone but Luke Wilson in this movie. And sorry to say his name like I was like saying a slur, but like it just doesn't work for me.
Right. So it's okay. This coding where, you know, it's like the smart, sensible people are rich and the quote unquote unintelligent people who multiply rapidly are clearly coded as being poor. And again, on IMDb, that couple in this like opening montage, their characters' names are Trashy Guy and Slutty Girl. There's a whole conversation that we'll have about like the way
women are like disenfranchised or not included at all, which I will argue could be solid satire on a view of a dystopian future, but it doesn't seem like that is what they're doing.
Exactly.
It is hard because this could easily be an episode that is like 5 hours long and I don't want it to, because it's a short movie.
Mercifully.
And we're trying to make episodes that are not
longer than the movie. Yeah.
But this movie is hard because it's loaded with a lot of stuff. And so I think the main things, and I would say that the people who are poor in the opening sequence and basically most of the people from the future are coded in the same way to different degrees of aggression.
Right.
I'm sort of talking about everybody there, but it is like bizarrely very American in that it's making all of these like bad quote-unquote choices seem like they are made completely by the individual and so that they can be held complete, and so that is like where the systemic, but it like that ranges in so many different ways where it's like it's not addressed that poor people have less access to birth control, to sex education, to abortions if they want them, and in terms of religion, like tend to be rather religious communities. And so it's like huge elements that are completely wiped, and it's just made to seem like, oh, well, no, they are just so chaotically horny that they cannot help but proliferate. Like, it's just like, it's so frustrating. It's like, it's very, I don't know.
Yeah,
very 2006. And then when you fast forward to the future, and then you see people who, first of all, I just am like, as a reality TV watcher, I object. And also, I think that again, like, ignores, it's like, oh, people want to see people get kicked in the nuts, which, first of all, yes, none of your business. Second of all, does nothing to address why those programs appear and why they're the most easily accessible programs in the fucking country. And it's like, you have to pay to watch the fucking Sopranos or whatever, or like whatever the grad school crowd is watching. And so it doesn't address any of the systemic, like, why are these programs so popular? Could it be possibly because they are the most accessible programs and that is not the fault of the people who cannot afford to pay for 500 other channels? Like, it's just it ignores things on every single level.
Truly.
And then we'll get to like fucking prisons and government where it's like, oh yeah, we are just simply not smart enough to know how prisons work. And it's like, no, that's how prisons are designed to work.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it just makes me sick. It just ignores that so many of these issues are by design and not out of individual failings from people that are being intentionally disenfranchised.
That is the entire premise of the, like, that's the commentary this movie is making. And it's so backwards. Cause it, like you said, it just fails to recognize the lack of access and opportunities you experience when you live in poverty. It fails to recognize that poverty is a cruel cycle that is nearly impossible to escape because of things like capitalism and racism and ableism and all these other systemic issues. It fails to, it suggests that, again, like, poor people multiply for fun and not because there are multiple structures designed to keep poor people poor so that their labor can be exploited by the ruling class. Like,
well, and then women, I mean, and it also like doubles down on, and this feels slightly more intentional at least, but like women are sex objects only.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe a more arguable point because it feels like they're at least more consciously making that point. And they're just not doing it very well. But like it just kind of on all fronts, it's just recasting systemic issues to be personal failings is just like the shittiest kind of satire mm-hmm. for me. And it doesn't even mean that, like, you know, it's not to say that like individuals who are being actively marginalized and othered can't hugely fuck up. That's obviously true. We've all got parents,
of course.
But that's not, but that is not the rhetoric of this movie at all. It's like the systemic issues are not at the top of this movie. It's like people are just not smart enough to know better.
It's a very 2006 way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
So yes, instead of there being any of that recognition of systemic oppression and there being any thoughtful commentary on, you know, the capitalist machine and all of its repressive systems, again, this movie just makes fun of poor people and relies on ableist language and homophobic slurs mostly for
right.
the humor of the movie.
And it's like that sort of stuff is very like very 2006, and I feel like it's mostly used for shock value.
Right.
It just doesn't feel satirical remotely. And it's like, it's just like, can you believe that we're using these like slurs over and over and over? And it's because poor people suck. And you're just like, mm-hmm. I hate every part of this. Like, what? I hate every part of this.
It's real crummy. Let's take a quick break and then come back for more discussion.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
And we're back.
So, sorry, I yelled out a lot of my frustrations with this movie.
Jamie,
I mean,
don't
and
apologize.
I think in terms of the... So we've talked a lot about, at this point, how the lower classes are made to seem like the source of all evil,
mm-hmm.
which it, okay, that is the place from which we're coming.
Yeah.
But in the future, it seems like the issues that the writers have with poor people in 2005 have become the entire culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so now people with all levels of money and power behave exactly like how two writers in 2005 who were rich at the time of writing it perceived poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like, I really like Mike Judge. And I think that he's made great stuff before this and after.
Yeah.
And this is just a really frustrating piece of work to look
this
at.
This was his flop era, I guess.
This was his flop era, but it was later, we'll get to this in a second, but like, it was later spun to seem like his, what's the opposite of flop? His masterpiece.
Yeah.
And it's like, because there were genuinely a lot
his
of,
top era? Sorry, I just thought of that.
His top era. But like, because there were, whatever, the history of this production was like, it became a cult classic, like a lot of Mike Judge stuff, mm-hmm. because it was considered too offensive and too like specific audience-y to release widely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it got this like, you know, kind of like punk credibility before it even came out, because it was like, oh, this is the movie studios don't want to release. And I understand that element of like, that is a really quick way to make a cult classic, especially from someone who's already made cult classics.
Mm-hmm.
But then you watch it and then you're just like, not to, you know, whatever. Like, it's pointless to have an argument of like, I agree with the studio, because I'm sure the reason the studio had for not wanting to release it widely, I would not agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also like not upset that this wasn't the most popular movie in the world.
Right.
Because I don't, like, its politics are very dated.
Yeah.
Anyways, fast forward to the future. Everyone has the exact opinions of Ethan Cohen and Mike Judge's opinion of poor people in 2005.
Right.
Puh. Okay. So what this does is, I feel like in the upper classes of the future, it further erases, again, with like the bizarre exception of corporations, which they seem very aware of,
mm-hmm.
ignores everything else. Examples being the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. where it's portrayed that it's not that the American government is designed to oppress people. It's that the people in the American government are just not smart enough to know how to provide justice to people, which is, mm-hmm. again, basically no one was talking about this in 2006, because it was like these two writers were considered to be on the cutting edge in 2006 and they clearly didn't know.
Right.
So again, it's like, don't punish yourself in the past, but in the present moment, it's like, well, that is not true. Like,
yeah, they're very glaring.
It's intentional that they are taking our rights away. There is an mm-hmm. end game in mind. It's not that they're not smart enough to know better.
Yeah.
And that same ethos is applied to the prison system, which is again egregious, because it's like, mm-hmm. you don't need us to tell you how implicitly and intentionally racist and classist the prison system is, mm-hmm. in the US. But again, the way that it's portrayed is like, well, we don't know. We don't know any better. Like, we're yeah. we didn't get enough math classes. Like, and you're just like, this is ridiculous. And the same applies to the way the police are, like, the police are, of the three, I feel like at least they are shown as, like, absurdly violent, mm-hmm. and absurdly reactionary in a way that I would agree with.
Yeah.
But again, it's, like, portrayed not because that is, like, endorsed and always has been in American policing. It's like, ugh. It's because the individual people are so ridiculous. And you're like, no, but it's
right.
They are empowered to act that way. Like, it's just, there's no systemic criticism except for corporations. And so the corporation stuff, weirdly, for the most part, works for me.
It works. Yeah. So I think that, and that is best exemplified by the Brando thing.
Yeah.
But there's also like Carl's Jr. is now running like child protective services. And
I thought that was kind of funny. Like that. And the whole like the drive-thru has like a gas they can shoot in your face to like dissociate you. Like
right,
that kind like, of stuff. I was like, I thought that that was like more effective and it felt very, very intentional. Like, you are an unfit mother. Your children will be repossessed by Carl's Jr. Like,
yeah.
That, for 2006 satire, that worked for me.
Right. But then there's other stuff where, like, you can go to Starbucks and get, like, an erotic massage, which felt like shamey of sex work. And there's the whole conversation to be had about that.
Well, and also, like, implies that the lower classes, or just like poor people in general, are, again, it like goes into what we were talking about earlier of like the way the opening sequence divides classes is like people with more education and money, not horny. People with less education and money, so horny, mm-hmm. they cannot help but have a trillion kids, mm-hmm. which is, again, unfair to both parties.
Right.
Like, you know, we start like, it's like, you know, people of all classes who are all manners of horny. Like, it's so like,
well,
obviously reductive of mm-hmm. people, like, to say that your class determines
how
your
horny you are,
sexual, like how much you want to reproduce. Like, it's just like, it feels like silly to even say out loud because it's so ridiculous. And mm-hmm. and I feel like the future furthers that logic of like what Mike Judge and Ethan Coen thought of poor people in 2005, which is that they are like so uneducated that they cannot control themselves, which again, you're just like,
right.
That goes into the future of like, oh, they just are so horny. They want hand jobs at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And it's like, not only like you're saying that's shamey to sex work, but it's also just like reductive of poor people in the way that the movie is from moment one. Right. Like, it's just
reinforces yeah. that. Yeah. So some of it works, some of it doesn't. But the Brando thing, I think, works the best, where there's voiceover yeah. that I'll basically just like say verbatim here, where it is said that water was considered a threat to Brando's profit margin. So Brando came to replace water everywhere, basically except for like in toilets, it seems, which is also pretty funny. But the Brando Corporation bought the FDA and then the FCC, enabling them to say, do, and sell anything they wanted, which is, you know, pretty, I think, a pretty effective commentary on the way that, like, corporate takeover is constantly happening mm-hmm. in this country and how, you know, capitalism is going to be the death of us all. And then right. because the way it manifests in this movie is that they are watering crops with Brando, which is full of electrolytes, which is basically just pumping salt into the ground where plants can no longer grow. And then it's leading to this dust bowl where everyone's going to starve to death. So,
and I appreciate that it took the further step of like, even if you resolved that issue by using water, that would collapse the economy because of how the economy mm-hmm. was built around one corporate entity.
Right.
And like, yeah, that kind of like the corporate stuff worked really well.
Yeah.
And it's just wild that they took that energy to specifically one sector. But again, I feel like that is very indicative of Bush era satire mm-hmm. where, and I do think that George W. Bush, who is, you don't need me to tell you, he's a fucking war criminal. He's a war criminal. Mm. But at the time, and even I remember my perception of him as a kid, mm-hmm. was that he was not smart. And so
right.
his decisions that were actively harming people in America and people outside of America, certainly he oh. started fucking wars.
Yeah.
But it was because he couldn't say nuclear correctly. It wasn't because mm-hmm. of all these systemic issues. And so I feel right. like that is a lot of the logic and energy that this movie is drawing on, is like how people perceived George W. Bush specifically mm-hmm. at this time, which is like he is abusing people in and outside of his country because he doesn't know better, when the reality is he knew exactly what he was doing because he was a nepotism piece of shit who was continuing the war that his father started.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there is no question that like he knew what he was doing, you know, but what the satire of the time focused on more was like, it was just like kind of picking on Southern Americans,
right,
of like, oh, I don't like how he says this word, versus like, he is continuing a war that has nothing to do with what he says. It like, he knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. This is not a controversial opinion. Like,
no, we're saying this here in the, you heard it here first on the Bechdel cast.
Beloved American President George W. Bush and beloved American painter, while we're at it. Obviously he's a piece of shit,
yeah,
but I just think that the way, and he was considered a piece of shit by a large portion of the country throughout his presidency,
yeah,
but it was like the ways that people made fun of him that I feel like informed the direction of the satire of this movie. And
for
it just
sure
feels like, while it's like the rage at him couldn't be more justified, the like the vantage point people are coming at is like very misdirected. And I feel like we sort of had a resurgence of this a lot during the Trump presidency, where it was, and it's like, I'm sure we fucking engaged with this to some, like, we were certainly there,
yeah,
of like, Trump is like not a smart person.
Mm.
I would say very true. But does he know exactly what he's doing when he's perpetuating systemic issues? 100%. And so it's like, not the question of like, I don't like this guy because he don't talk smart enough for me. It's like, like, take a step back. And this movie, yeah, doesn't take a step back.
Mm-mm.
Except for Brando. It's so weird. Sorry.
It is so weird. So, yes, the kind of biases that the movie is leaning into as far as, like, being anti-poor extends to other things such as sexism and racism, because like, I
and
would
homophobia
and homophobia, right,
yeah.
I think a lot of the characters who are, you know, quote-unquote idiots who are populating this idiocracy in the year 2505 are playing into, again, not only classist stereotypes but racist stereotypes and sexist stereotypes, because a lot of the women that you see, not that there are many on screen, but the few women with speaking roles who are in this movie usually are characterized as bimbos, like the attorney general or like the women who are hanging around the president. They are,
right,
like dressed provocatively and, you know, just again, this like quote slutty bimbo type. And that is like, again, the filmmakers just,
well,
bias against any sexually liberated woman or sex worker.
And this is an element of the movie that I think could have worked, like implying that the future of America is wildly sexist and hateful towards sex work is, I don't even think, a controversial take. That is where the law,
sure,
is currently headed. But unfortunately, the way the movie is written just seems to like say like, yeah, this society treats women like bimbos who deserve no respect because that is what they
are. Right.
And like, that is how they are behaving. And it seems like they have no cognizance of how they're being marked. It just doesn't feel like it's satire. Like, it just feels like doing,
right,
the thing.
I feel like,
especially with Maya Rudolph's character, like,
yeah, so it's weird because I could see someone making the argument that, well, yeah, the characters are using all this homophobic and ableist language because, you know, that's what a devolved society would do, and that's the satire, that's the commentary. But you don't get to have that happen, and then I just feel like the commentary isn't actually being made.
No, I mean, it's not. And it's like, I understand why they thought it was, maybe, but it's also like, you're operating from like, even the foundation of the premise is so flawed that it's like you can't really address specific issues based right. on the idea of like, well, no one is smart enough to realize what they're doing. And it's like, well, how could you address any systemic issue if this movie does not recognize systemic issues as a concept?
Exactly. You know? Like, right.
It just recognizes all systemic issues as basically
being the fault
true,
of poor
as
people.
It applies to poor people. And then it's like, oh, well, women are treated as bimbos because they're bimbos. Like,
yeah, because that's just.
And like Maya Rudolph is not like the other girls, but also she's kind of like the other girls. Okay, can we talk about Maya Rudolph's character?
Yes, 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 yes.
Because I do appreciate that by the end of the movie, and I mean the end of the movie, she is more motivated. She rests, you know, in the terms of like classic Bechdel cast discussion.
Sure.
She saves the male protagonist of the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like
she is active in helping to resolve the conflict of the film.
Right.
At least the one that ends up getting presented, because like halfway through the movie, it's like, and now the conflict is crops. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
Rosie, but for most of the movie, that isn't even the issue. So she becomes involved in what eventually ends up, like you're just saying, like becoming the issue mm-hmm. of the movie. And it would have been interesting if that was the whole premise of the movie, because that was giving me Mary-Kate and Ashley Passport to Paris vibes. Okay, if you thought that was part at any point in this episode, you were wrong, because that I was like, okay, they more effectively resolved a national water crisis issue than anyone oh. in it. Like, I mean,
I've been waiting to bring up a movie like Don't Look Up as being more effective.
I don't want to talk about Don't Look Up because I didn't like it. I want to talk about Passport to Paris because I
yes,
did
I'm,
like
I'm
it.
I'm so sorry.
And Mary-Kate and Ashley resolved France's water access issues in the, and they got to kiss their crushes. Mm, like,
perfect story.
Could you even in your entire life say that? No, I can't. All I did was put Dr. Bronner's directly under my vagina. I can't do what they do.
Dr. Brondo?
Dr. Brondo's Whoa. Fucking acidic waste onto my
green.
And it's insult to injury with the Dr. Bronner's issue, because the bottle is covered in wort. And then I looked after the throbbing had stopped. And I will say, I was taking a shower with someone who I liked.
Whoa, sexy. Oh, I mean, speaking of horniest time, we're all having a horny time.
I mean,
anyway.
Well, look, when I tell you this was not recent, but anyways, I read the bottle hours later.
Yeah.
And the warning I needed was there, but it was buried in like weirdo garbage. Mm, anyways, yeah. Where was that in Idiocracy? could have been helpful. Uh-huh. All that to say, like, this movie, it starts to make a criticism, but then says like, well, but insert oppressed class here is basically like that anyways. So,
right. Well,
and then you're just like, I don't, like, it's just bizarre. It does feel like, I don't know. I and if you are older than us, which might not be possible, we're quite old. But if you are older than us, feel free to weigh in on, like, my interpretation, and a lot of this is reflection, because I was like whatever, kid throughout the Bush years. Mm-hmm. But my interpretation of a lot of this, just based on, like, I whatever, grew up watching Jon Stewart with my aunt. Like, my aunt was very into this mm-hmm. brand of comedy, and so that was, like, primarily through her that I would see it. And it felt very, like, allied with Democrat senators and lawmakers in a way that is largely, for a lot of leftists, no longer true. Mm-hmm. Is, like, at this point, I feel like it's very, I mean, it was, like, not that it wasn't known by people in the mid-2000s, but is larger known now that, like, Democrat senators and lawmakers are also largely fucking you over, but they're just, like, mm-hmm. smiling while they do it.
Right.
But at this time, it felt like Democrats, or just generally center to left-leaning politicians, were not on the chopping block to be criticized. Mm-hmm. And that's because that it doesn't really come up. Like, you do, I thought you got, like, a pretty effective, like, Fox News, early Fox News commentary.
Sure.
Here of, like, it's just like sexy naked people talking nonsense, uh-huh. which is like, that's a lot of what Fox News is. And like, mm-hmm. It's not based in facts. It's very visual medium. Mm-hmm. But you do not get the other side of that. Because I think at the time, the writers of the movie would have agreed with like centrist propaganda MSNBC vibes, you yeah. know, stuff I'm de-radicalizing my mommy from.
Wow. Jill.
It's not working. no, it is working. She no longer good. Brings out her MSNBC mom mug when I am when visiting.
Oh, good.
I think she's starting to be embarrassed of it, and rightfully so. Listens to the show.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jill.
I wanted to go back to Rita real quick, where, so as you said, she's absent for a large chunk of the movie, but then she does become active in the resolution, and she helps to again resolve this like crop thing. She has agency in those few scenes, but prior to that, she is almost indistinguishable from the other characters who are also supposed to be the quote unquote idiots, because she, for example, she cannot grasp the idea that her pimp, this guy named Upgrade,
so
would be dead and would have died 500 years earlier, kind of thing. Like,
she spends so much of the movie looking for this character that, like, it's so frustrating because the movie, I think to its credit, does introduce Luke Wilson and Maya Rudolph as like characters with very different backgrounds who are of equal intelligence. That is why they're being selected for this. And so to fast forward 500 years and have him be able to understand the fact that time has passed and her not able to understand that is ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense. And it's also suggesting, I feel what's being stated here by the filmmakers is, well, of course she's not smart. She's a sex worker. Like, it's just casting judgment on...
Well, yeah. And it's like, and also the only thing that's on her mind is her loyalty and or fear of her pimp.
Right.
And it's like, and this like slowly disappears throughout the plot, but it's not motivated by anything. Like, it's just slowly, or if it's motivated by anything, it's by the fact that she's developing a crush on Luke Wilson for no reason.
Right. So that's the other thing where she becomes Joe's love interest.
Pee pee poo poo.
Because
Caitlin.
If a man and woman are the two leads of a movie, they legally have to get together by the end.
If you were alive in 2005, you have to get married. 2005 heads have to fuck.
Yeah. Initially, they're just acquaintances because they're both participating in this experiment. And then when they're both in, you know, 2505, they link back up. He's trying to basically rescue her and bring her along so that they can time travel when he thinks that's possible. I would say this, my favorite scene of this movie is when Joe is trying to make sense of time travel. Mm-hmm. That was commentary on time travel narratives that I thought was the
most effective commentary.
That was good. I liked that a lot.
This movie does have its moments, which almost makes it more frustrating. Where you're like, I would keep like a solid 7 minutes of this movie.
And then the rest is trash. But yeah, so they link back up and they're trying to escape. And then things start to get flirty when they're at the White House. And well, before that, he has to pretend like they're going to have sex with each other so that they can actually go off and plan their escape. And that, to me, that worked because he's not actually trying to like exploit her, have sex with her, or anything like that.
That didn't work for me because I felt like it was implied that he was inherently of like, he's a good guy because he's not trying to assault her. You're like, that doesn't mean that it makes any sense that they would be together. Like,
right. That doesn't justify why they end up together.
Right. I mean, in terms of the plot,
right.
Makes sense.
But then things do start to get flirty, like when they're at the White House and she's like, you know, you don't have to sleep on the floor. You can sleep in the bed with me. And he's like, his whole thing.
He never understands that she's a sex worker through the entire movie and possibly through their entire marriage, ?
We don't know. Unclear. Yeah, he thinks that she's a painter. So maybe you could make the argument like, yeah, she's not smart enough to understand that her pimp has been dead for five centuries.
Sure.
He's not smart enough to notice that Rita is a sex worker, question mark. None of it worked. I did just...
No.
That, none of that worked
for
me.
None of it worked.
But eventually they get married and Rita becomes his first lady because he becomes president. And it's just like, of course this would happen in a movie from 2006 where a man and a woman have to romantically end up together at the end.
I think it would have been more, I mean, there's so many more interesting ways to take that where it's like, if you're the only two, like, even if you are going from the fucking baseline weirdo eugenicist logic that this movie depends on to happen, I just feel like it'd be more fun to see two characters who are from the same era and are like considered intellectually superior, like in conflict with each other, which these two right. never are. Mm-mm. They're never in conflict with each other. I understand that it's like they have a vested interest in banding together, but it just like her character is never taken seriously enough to really develop any sort of side plot of her own. Like if you just like let go of the fact that like if you just allowed her to understand where she was, mm-hmm. things could have become so different. Like she could have allied with a different side of the fucking future conflict than right. Luke Wilson did. They could have been political rivals. They could have been like so many different things could have happened other than like she has no idea where she is. And then at the last second, she's like, I have a crush on you. Like that's like the most boring thing that could possibly happen. That said, Luke Wilson's character, like you were just implying, is also very boring mm-hmm. and hard to root for. And he's like such a straight. I mean, it's not Luke Wilson's fault, but it's like that character is such a straight man that you're like, who fucking cares?
Right.
Who gives a shit? This man is so boring.
And then there's this like running joke where she is tricking this guy into giving her money on the promise that sometime in the future she will do something sexual with him, which just
sure,
makes her seem kind of like deceitful and
dishonest. That didn't really bother me. I'm just like,
it
yeah, she's like
me, I think,
conning a future man. I don't really care because she has to like survive.
It only bothered me because I think that someone watching this might draw a connection between, because she's a sex worker, like, oh, like this is what sex workers do. They try to like, I don't know, cheat you out of your money, or they're dishonest, or they're you
sure.
know, something like that. And
I see what
so
you're
that,
saying,
that's
yeah.
what rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's a few ways to come at that. Cause I was also like, well,
sure.
She needs money. And this person is, has money and she needs to survive.
Yeah.
I wanted to quickly talk about how Mike Judge talks about this movie now, or by now I mean sort of like the way that, in the Idiocracy is a Documentary era. So the last like 8 years.
Sure.
So he said this in an interview with the Daily Beast. Let me just quickly track the year on this.
Mm-hmm.
2017. Okay. Early Trump era. And this is him commenting on what then was already a very common Idiocracy is a Documentary tweet vibes.
Right.
God, so boring. Okay. So he says in 2017, quote, 3 or 4 years ago, I started getting comments about it, people discovering it, and it just keeps building. Now every other Twitter comment I get is about Idiocracy and how it's a documentary now. At first I was thinking, yeah, that's nice to hear, but then very specific things like Carl's Jr. announcing that they were going to have a completely robotic non-employee store, and that's Carl's Jr. in the movie. Then there's this thing called the Fellatio Cafe in Switzerland where you get blowjobs with coffee, and we had the Starbucks thing in there. And then Donald Trump being in the WWF before and talking about his penis size. It's just one specific thing after another, unquote. Mm. Now, I will not argue with the like technical factual truth of what he's saying, but like I feel like the reason people say Idiocracy is a Documentary has more to do with hyper specifics like that versus the foundation of the world that's built in the movie that has, I would argue, little to nothing to do with what we are dealing with now.
Yeah.
And also I meant to say this at the beginning of the episode, hilarious to think that we're going to exist in 500 years. But
I like kept having that thought. I'm like, we're all going to be fucking dead. The environment will not sustain life because of how badly we fucked it up.
Awesome. But you know, whatever. Appreciate the optimism. Right. But ultimately, you know, like I just think it's a bummer because I do appreciate the filmmaker that it's like, and I wonder if in the future he will push back on this very persistent idea, because mm-hmm. I feel like people are repeated. Like, I wouldn't really care as much if this was like a movie that no one saw in 2006 and people still like no one really saw it, because then you're just like, well,
right,
it's a victimless crime, you know, like. But because people are continually pushed to this movie as an example of like, this is what's wrong with America, when I just, outside of the corporate criticism, was not getting a lot of what appears to actually be wrong.
Right.
Right. Like, it just feels like an annoying, distracting, victim blamey approach to cultural criticism. And I wonder if, and it's one thing, it's like, okay, if you were a filmmaker in 2006, just reflect on that. That's all you can really do at mm-hmm. this point. And I would be interested to see if he ever kind of reflects on the criticism of right. this movie.
It, yeah, because it's very frustrating to be living today in a society where
period
right, period end of thought no, but like, our rights are actively being taken away. There's talk of how the Supreme Court is going to continue to keep taking away
the right to gay marriage, like the right to, like, just all this stuff.
I was talking about this with my best friend recently about how, like, good news days from the past, like, couple decades have only been good news days because it's just like, wow, this right that people should have had all along finally is a right that people have. Woo-hoo!
It's officially, it's been codified.
Right. So, like, but then you've got your bad news days where it's like, oh yeah, Roe v. Wade overturned and now abortion is criminalized and gay marriage might be criminalized. And you just, like, all these horrible things. And what was my point? So it's just, like, so frustrating to, like, I mean, and that's just the fucking tip of the iceberg, just like systemic racism and policing and all, just every societal ill.
Well, stuff that has never been, like, significantly legally challenged.
No, right. It's just like
we're getting a lot of rights overturned, but there's also a lot of rights that were never even gotten.
Right. There's just a whole slew of, like, oppressive societal issues that we're dealing with every day. And then for people to compare that to this movie, which just blames poor people for the decline of civilization.
It's very of the age. And I know that, like, sometimes we get criticism for, like, examining older movies from a current lens. But, even in the 2006 lens, like, this was very much, again, it's like, we're not saying that this movie was unusual for its time. And right. I do very strongly feel that, like, this type of comedy, there's, like, art isn't useless.
Right.
It's not like, but I do think that you can trace this era of satire's role in a kind of, like, unproductive energy
right.
with people that yes. a lot of people now recognize and are, like, not engaging with. There's not a ton of, like, I feel like, I mean, even just, like, the fact that Bill Maher is the only person from this era that is still doing the same shit he was in 2006 and now most of his original viewers fucking hate him.
Right.
So I feel like that, like, he is the case study for, like, people don't like this anymore. And mm-hmm. the people who like this are, like, weirdo doubling down assholes. Like,
yeah,
this type of comedy doesn't really exist anymore in a popular sense.
Right.
But the fact that this was popular in its time does leave a legacy in the way that, like, the comedy that we were doing, you know, 5 to 10 years ago and the comedy we're doing now will leave a legacy, and it's mm-hmm. not all going to be great. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, the older I get, the more it's just like, you can't take back your fuck ups.
Yeah.
All you can do is address and not endorse them. And it feels like that is kind of like what the filmmakers of this movie have done by not mm-hmm. pushing back against the Idiocracy as a documentary thing.
Right. Yeah. They're just yeah. kind of patting themselves on the back for being like,
yeah, awesome movie. Yeah, probably stream.
I predicted a coffee shop that gives out blowjobs, which, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Anyway,
not an indicator of the downfall of society.
Right. Do you have anything else to talk about?
No, I think this movie had its heart in the right place, but it, like, it just, I really, that gets aged extremely poorly, and I don't like it at all.
Agree. And right, yeah, like we understand the cultural landscape informing the media and the satire at the time, and sometimes it does feel weird to criticize a movie that's a product of its environment from like almost two decades ago, but that's also our job. Anyway, the movie I don't think passes the Bechdel test.
I don't think so either.
I don't think women interact at any point, and if they do, I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
But what about our nipple scale, in which we rate the movie 0 to 5 nipples based on how does it do when looking at it through an intersectional feminist lens? And I would give this movie...
not good.
I'll give it a half nipple. Because I do think it gets the kind of like capitalist consumerism commentary more right than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But that should have been one of many things that gets acknowledged and commented on that the movie ignores and instead blames the downfall of society on poor people.
Yeah.
And that sucks. So, and then again, just like all of the classist, the ableist, the racist, the sexist coding of the characters is really shitty. 1/2 nipple, I'll give it to Maya Rudolph, whose talents in this movie are squandered because she is far better than what this movie suggests.
She's the best. I'm going to give a 0 because I didn't like it and it pissed me off. So I guess I have nothing else to say. I agree that the corporate criticism is valid. There were jokes in this movie that made me laugh. Like there are jokes in this movie that I'll probably return to and be like, that was a funny thing. But it's just the premise of this movie is so frustrating to me that I have no nostalgic attachment to it. So
sure.
I'm going to give it 0. So I have no nipples to give. And I, if anything, to end on a positive note, I do feel like you're like, oh, there is actually a huge market right now for effective satire.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I think most of it is happening currently in TV, but there is a lot of good satire of American politics and American dystopia that are coming out. I do want to say that, like, it's not that, you know, Idiocracy being like kind of shitty means that American satire is dead. It just means like this one aged very poorly.
Yeah.
But the genre has continued. There's no, you know, lack of inspiration to pull from. And it is a genre that is like kind of gone on, I think, to develop and grow in a very interesting way. And also, I think that satire has everything to do with the point of view of who's writing it. And so having more satire that is not written by already powerful straight cis white guys is always going to be a good thing. And that we have a lot more of that now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still obviously room for more.
Certainly.
But I do think that this genre like is a very like satire, like good satire and like timeless satire is like really, really hard to do.
True, because
which is why this movie didn't do it.
Right.
It worked at the time. It does not work now.
It doesn't work now.
So 0 nipples, hated it. Let's end the episode.
Let's do
Happy 4th of July. Just kidding.
Woohoo.
Abolish the Supreme Court, this bitch.
Shitty country.
Anyways.
And watch Z-Way. I think Z-Way is doing some of my favorite
satire. She's doing some of the greatest American satire right now. Yeah, like she's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that in mind, satire historically does not age particularly well. This is not a personal attack or indictment on Mike Judge. This movie did not age well.
Yeah.
At all. I don't think it's any longer really like valuable satire to reflect on where America is at. And it probably wasn't at the time either, but that's kind of no one's business at this point because it's the future.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, we love you. Keep fighting, keep taking care of yourself. And we will be right there with you doing the same. The 4th of July is a waste of your time, but if you want a hot dog, by all means, get one.
I also think this episode comes out like 3 days after.
So. Well, then fuck you. No, look, there's no wrong time to eat a hot dog is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And so for the 4th of July to have co-opted hot dog culture in this way, I think is a net negative. Yeah. But, you know, whatever. All press is good press for the hot dog.
Yeah, of course.
So you can follow us online at Bechdelcast on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow our Patreon, a.k.a. Matreon, at patreon.com/Bechdelcast. It is currently Minions March, mm-hmm. a.k.a. what was the Gruella Steville?
Corella Steville.
There's two options.
Yeah. It's either
Gruella Steville or Corella Steville.
Yeah.
We're doing two Steve Carell movies. So we're doing 40-Year-Old Virgin, a very, very popular request. People wanted to hear us get upset about it. And boy, did we. And we are also doing a Minions episode, which is just, I can't wait. Mm-hmm. So go over there, and we have over 100 bonus episodes to listen to. Just me and Caitlin shooting the shit, having fun. Mm. And
also our merch at tpublic.com/thebechdelcast for all of your merchandising needs. And otherwise, take care of yourselves and
water your crops with toilet water.
Exactly. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.